Welcome to Classical 95.9 WCRI's Conducting Conversations with your host, Mike Maino. 1 hour of music and conversation with notable people in the arts, bringing you the stories of how music has impacted their lives. The show will give a behind-the-scenes look at the guest's background, interests, or special project.
Conducting Conversations is brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, from sheet music and brand name instruments to rentals, repairs, lessons, and more. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.
And now here's your host, Mike Maino.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Conducting Conversations. Tonight, it's indeed a pleasure to welcome a first-timer into our studio. A man that should have been here years ago. He is the artistic director of the GAM Theater in Pawtucket. Tony Estrella is here. Welcome, Tony.
Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you here, finally. It's been one of those things that I've been trying to get around to, and in a busy schedule, things sometimes get overlooked, but we're really glad you're here tonight. We want to find out everything there is to know about the GAM Theater.
All right.
In Pawtucket. First off, let's find out a little bit about you first.
Sure.
As artistic director. That means you have crayons and watercolors and
right.
Things like that? Or no.
Yeah, no, that means that, yeah, all of the, yeah, certainly crayons, watercolors, paintbrushes, toilet plungers, you
right.
know, everything that is necessary to keep things moving forward. But, you know, mainly the job is, you know, what do we do over there? We make plays. So, you know, the artistic director is responsible to pick them all, staff them all, hire everybody who's going to do them, and oversee kind of the mission of the theater and the particular vision of the GAM and the kind of work we do. So, you know, it is kind of chief cook and bottle washer, which is, but it's a great gig because, you know, you're charged with being able to shepherd the artistic mission of a theater. And, you know, we take what we do down there, you know, hopefully with a lot of fun in our hearts, but we take it very seriously. And so, you know, I always tell people when they say, well, what do you do for your, what's the job like on a day-to-day basis? And it changes every day. So it's kind of hard to nail that down. But the thing that I certainly put most of my effort into when I'm not either directing a show or acting on stage, because I'm also an actor and that's how it all started for me, is in picking those five plays that goes into the season. You know, that's the biggest part of the job, the most important part of the job. And if you get that right, mm-hmm. Everything else follows.
All right. And are you a local guy? Did you start in Rhode Island?
I am. I was actually born in Pawtucket.
Yeah. Wow, there's three of you then. Still there.
Right. No, I was born in Pawtucket and lived there for the better part of my childhood. Family moved to Smithfield, Rhode Island, where my parents still live. And I, you know, other than a brief time in New York City after grad school, I've spent all of my life here.
So theater was your thought when you were in school, or did that come after school?
No, it happened in college. You know, it was I grew up in a working class family, and so theater necessarily, we didn't go to a lot of theater as kids. You know, certainly saw some through school, but as I got into college, I went to the University of Rhode Island, right down the street here. So mm-hmm. And I teach there still. I've been on the faculty of the theater department for the last 17 years or something. So
you started there when you were 10.
I did. Yeah. I'm man and boy. I've been there since, had some connection with the university since 1988, which is when I started to go to school there. And then shortly after grad school, I got hired on to teach. And even though my schedule barely allows it, I try to keep that up. And I teach Shakespeare there in the theater department. So, you know, the whole, my whole life has been really spent.
Local boy local, makes good.
Yeah, trying to anyway, yeah.
It's in this small world of Rhode Island and nearby Connecticut and Massachusetts, it's one of those things where I could probably name 35 other guests that have been on Conducting Conversations, and I'm sure you would know them all, because that's the way it is.
Small world, right.
We just talked, before we started the show, we were talking about the rounding third presentation that's coming up at Ocean State Theater, and Fred Sullivan is going to be starring in that. Fred Sullivan Jr. And he works with you too.
Yeah, Fred's a resident director with us and has acted on our stage as well. You know, in an incredible production of Red by John Logan, he played the artist Mark Rothko. And Fred has directed with us, every year since I've been involved with the theater, and that goes back to 1997 in the first production we worked on together. outside of when I was in school at Trinity Rep, on a production of Hamlet that Fred directed me in that role, in which we revisited again a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. So Fred is an integral part of what we do, and we'll be directing Winter's Tale, another Shakespeare, next year. That's going to close out the 2015-2016 season.
All right. We want to talk about next year's season in a moment, and just let everyone know what's coming, because this year is done, right?
Yeah, we just finished up.
June 7th, and now you've got a month off, or how does that work?
Oh, I only wish. Yeah, things tend to slow down. As most theaters do, other than, specifically summer stock places, we operate almost on a school year basis. We go from September to the end of May, early June. And, so the summer's a chance to clean things up, get the, put a new coat of paint on some stuff, and start getting ready for rehearsals, which will begin in August for the season. So it's not really that much time off, and goodness knows the physical space needs a rest, the staff needs to recalibrate, et cetera. And if there's a couple of days here and there that any of us can stick our heads in a book on a beach, that would be nice too, but we'll see about that.
It always comes along. Now, the GAM Theater is what we're talking about, but right. There's another name attached to it.
Right.
And that's tell us about that.
Well, this is our 30th anniversary season that we just finished up, and so 30 years is a long time for any organization. But it wasn't always the GAM Theater. There's Sandra Feinstein GAM Theater, which is the full name of the theater now. For the first half or so of its life, it was Alias Stage, and then about halfway through, the theater received a naming gift that changed the name of the theater from the philanthropist Alan Sean Feinstein. To name it after his sister, Sandra, who was an artist herself and involved in the theater. It's going to have been a tale of two names, but ostensibly the same theater, though,
right.
Like any organization, it's going to go through a lot of phases, and it's gone through quite a few phases in its time.
There you go.
You know.
Rhode Island and Providence Plantations.
Actually, right? Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's been quite a storied history. The theater started back in 1984. It sprung from Trinity Repertory Company and their conservatory, which is their graduate, which that's gone through many names. It's not called the conservatory anymore. But students who are graduating from that program, formed the theater back in 1984. And if there's been one really consistent thing is that, and myself included, that a lot of the leadership of the theater and the kind of artistic core of the theater over many years has come from the training program at Trinity as well. I graduated there in 1995 and started working with Alias Stage at the time in around 1996, 97. And have been, part of the organization in one way or another since then. Became artistic director in late 2002, which coincided with a move. And the theater has had many moves. There have been fires and buildings have burned down, et cetera. That's what happens when you play around in mill buildings in Olneyville. And the latest incarnation is the move that happened in late 2002 to Pawtucket, where we are now, which is in a nice part of the Armory complex in Pawtucket. So
right close to 95, very easy
right
access.
Off 95. As we always, people get very nervous about Pawtucket and say, "How am I going to find my way around those one-way streets?" And we say, "You don't have to go on any of them."
There you go.
Exit 29. Very
now
easy.
You brought a CD with you with some music. Now you're not doing musicals as such.
Right.
So normally when we have a guest from a theater, lots of times they'll be playing if they were going to produce Oklahoma or whatever
right,
it is.
Right. Sure.
We play the cast recording, but in this case, we're just going to add a little flavor to the day and tell us what you brought.
Yeah, the first show of next season is Tennessee Williams' Streetcar Named Desire, and which we're hoping that is going to be, we're in the planning stages of that, and rehearsals won't start for a couple of months. I'll be directing the show, and one of the things that Tennessee talks about in his very articulate, gorgeous stage directions is this the blue piano, he calls it, that is it, ostensibly, if depending on how you do the production, that you're hearing from a nearby dive bar. We're hoping to incorporate live music into the show. And we're looking for, so it leaves us a lot of leeway on what that blue piano might sound like, but I think the phrase itself is very evocative. So appropriately enough, we're going to go to the blues. So this first song is something that will probably make its way into the show one way or another. As again, we hope it'll be live. It's Bessie Smith with the singing "A Good Man Is Hard to Find."
regret the day that I was born and that man I ever seen. My happiness is less today. My heart is broke, that's why I say, not a good man is hard to find. You always get another kind. Yes, so when you think that he's your past, you look and find him fooling round some old gal. Then you rage, you are crazy. You wanna see down in his grave. If your man is nice, take my advice. Hug him in the morning, kiss him at night. Give him plenty of love and treat your good man right. For the good man nowadays sure is hard to find. So hard to find. We always get that rough old kind. Just when you think that he's your past, you look and find him hanging round some old gal. Then you rave, child, you crave. You wanna see him dead, laying in his grave. So if your man is nice, take my advice. Hug him in the morning, kiss him at night. Give him plenty smack, madam, treat your man right. All the good man nowadays sure is hard to find.
Well, that puts us in the mood, a little bluesy feeling there, Bessie yeah. Smith. And if people are following along at home or listening via their computer and they want to check out your website while we're talking, they can go to what?
To gamtheater.org, and that's a theater with an R-E at the end.
So it's G-A-M-M, for those of you that might not be in the Rhode Island area. If you're in the Rhode Island area, you know it. But if you're listening to other parts of the world, G-A-M-M theater with an R-E at the end, .org. That's great. And is there a phone number they can call for local people who are looking for information?
401-723-4266 or 723-GAM.
There you go. Operators are standing by.
They and really
if
you are.
Call, if you're the first caller, you'll get an 8x10 glossy of Tony autographed.
I got a whole box of them. I'm going to be the first 100 callers.
All right.
Get rid of those things.
We're going to talk about the theater and some of the upcoming season. The upcoming season starts, as you mentioned, in September.
Right.
And what you mentioned, the first show.
Yeah.
And how long does a show normally run at GAM?
They tend to go about a month. We do around 30 performances. Depends. Some shows run a little bit longer, some a little bit less. But generally, the run goes for about a month. And Streetcar starts right around September, I believe September 17th, and runs through the middle of October.
Okay. All right. So that's as you said, hopefully you get a chance to get to the beach and relax a little bit before you start this. Now, other theaters that have been in here, we have quite a few theaters, whether it's Trinity or Ocean State or Theater by the Sea or Granite Theater or the Stadium Theater or the theaters in general, whether they produce their own shows or not. Is your theater an equity theater or
it
professional?
It is, yeah, it is. One of the big things that, you know, I was talking earlier about the kind of phases of the theater, and when we moved to Pawtucket, you know, the big change for the theater and really what has defined this phase of it the last 12 and 13 years has been the move to a kind of an overall professionalization of the company, and that you know, always with the theater begins and ends with the actors. So you know, we are proudly a member of Actors Equity Association. I am, as an actor, and the theater hires on that basis, which is great, because it's opened up a lot for us, in that it's helped us, the theater, connect with the larger theatrical community stretching up into Boston. There's not there's a few professional theaters in Rhode Island, but it's a relatively small scene.
Sure.
And so we are, you know, we actually collectively bargain with Actors Equity through a larger group called New England Area Theaters, and we're the only Rhode Island theater in that. It's basically the professional theaters in the New England area that are below a certain number of seats.
So there might be one in Maine or one in New Hampshire,
yeah,
or whatever.
But, yeah, whatever, but mostly Boston area, and there's some in the outlying areas, and us. And so it's been great, because it's connected us with not only with the audiences up in greater New England, but also artists as well. And so, for instance, you know, in Streetcar Named Desire, the actress playing Blanche DuBois, Mariana Basham, is just played Hedda Gabler for us this year, and she's a, you know, remarkable actor, and is a Boston-based actress, and works a lot up there. And so, you know, by opening that up, we've also opened, I think, the theater up to a larger, you know, and more denser community, you know, and it's great to kind of, and as far as an artist, as a director and an actor, it's great to work with new people, and to be challenged by people you haven't even met yet is always an exciting thing.
It's always great to meet new talent, and you always are learning things.
Absolutely.
I know that. Let's get to one more piece of music before we take our first break. What's the second piece you bought for us?
Yeah, this is maybe my favorite artist of all time, Tom Waits, in a song.
You obviously haven't heard me yet.
From one of his early records called Small Change. This is very appropriate to Streetcar, and will probably get used somewhere in the show. It's called I Wish I Was in New Orleans.
We will listen to that, then take a short break and be back with more of Tony and the Gam Theater. Saloon.
that old Chuggy Wise and Clever never knew. Me and you, Sam Jones and all, and I wish I was in New Orleans. I can see in my dreams on and on down Burgundy. Oh,
welcome back to Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Mano, and we're sitting with Tony Estrella, the artistic director of the GAM Theater in Pawtucket. And we're talking about their season next year. This year is over, and time to start planning. And we talked about some of the facts that you have, I'm not in-house actors, that's a layman's term. But,
right, yeah.
But people you count on for more than one production.
Sure, yeah. You know, as I was saying earlier, the theater was formed by a group of, you know, people coming together, like kind of an artist collective, coming out of school, a lot of energy saying, let's do it, let's make our own theater, and has continued with that kind of energy throughout its history. And, you know, in this latest phase, since I've been artistic director, we have what we call a group of resident artists, which is a loose version of a company, you know, and that have been with us for a long time and have served the theater, some even longer than I have, over the past, you know, 15 and more years. So there's a core group of actors and a couple of directors. I mentioned Fred earlier, Judith Swift, who's also connected with University of Rhode Island, is one of my mentors and has been
another,
a professor there.
Another Conducting Conversations alumni.
I'm sure she's been in this room probably more than once. And Judith directs with us on a yearly basis, and she's been, you know, an incredible, not only is she a great artist, but has been an incredible mentor to me since college. It's nice to keep those connections going. And so we have a great group of actors that have really formed the identity of the company and continue to work with us on a regular basis, as well as designers. So, you know, it's nice because it's one of the challenges of any company is when you have, you know, a certain amount of residents that have, you know, have a consistent amount of work. And then as we were talking about earlier, you know, we who are residents, who are there consistently, we want to constantly be open to what's new, and who's going to come in and really kind of, you know, challenge us to think differently about, you know, because if you allow, any organization allows itself to stay static, you know, whether it's in, you know, the same people over and over again or the same kinds of things over and over again, you know, the audience is going to start to get antsy, you know,
right.
Because they can tell that you're getting a little bit, you know, complacent. And you know, art has to be the enemy of complacency.
Now, as speaking of that, when you receive a script, do you pretty much stick to the script and the artistic direction that's attached to it?
Sure.
Are you bound by that legally?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, of course, any play that you are licensed to do, you have to get a license to do it. If it's not in the public domain. The public domain, of course, would be anything that's so old that no lawyer can get you for, you know, changing it. So Shakespeare, exactly. And Shakespeare, right, of course, gets no, you know, he's been dead for 400 years, so he gets no royalty. And so people, directors, et cetera, are able to take many more liberties with that work. But assuming it's a contemporary or modern play, you are bound by your contract to stick to the words. You say every word that is in that script. There is a considerable artistic interpretive leeway for each production. That's why each production is going to be different, you know. But as far as the words are concerned, and if we were doing a musical, certainly, I'm sure many of your guests have said, the music, you've got to do that, you know. You can, you know, fool around with the orchestrations, et cetera. Maybe that's a good metaphor for what we do. You can certainly, you know, designs, et cetera. You're not bound to anybody else's design, but you are bound to say say those words in order as they are. And if you would like to change something, you need to go through the proper channels in order to do that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that is met with, sure, go ahead. And more often than not, it's like, how dare you don't touch my play.
Right. That's the way it was written, and that's the way we want it.
Right.
Now, you mentioned the word design. You didn't mention in this context, but you have stage designs and different things for each show. Mm-hmm. So you have in-house people that work on that?
Sure. We have, same as I was speaking with the actors, we have a group of designers that we work with consistently, and then we look outwards for, to bring in people to along with the actors and directors to keep us all honest and to bring in new ideas, et cetera. We have a very small theater. It's 135 seats. So it's an incredibly intimate experience, that's really part of our mission. And so it's important to us that, we can reach out and touch the audience literally. I always say, we've been talking and we're in kind of early stages of thinking about what's the next phase for us as far as growth is concerned. And we certainly do need a bigger space. We're bursting out of our space as it is, both in numbers of seats and in just what we can do artistically.
Right.
So in that small space, it's a big challenge for our set designers in particular, because they've got to find ways of making that space completely transform each time the audience comes in. So for those five plays are five different worlds.
Right.
And that's really hard to do in a tiny confined space. At the same time, those limitations often, provide for great inspiration from the designers. And, this year was a great example, this last season that just passed I love that moment when the audience comes in and comes around and sees the set for the first time.
And
they
moment.
Go, it's totally different than last time, a completely different world. And that's always fun and a big challenge for our designers. But the intimacy is a limitation on one hand, but it's also a great, great advantage because, you're really sharing the room. With the audience, you can look them in the eye. You're going to sweat on them occasionally. Yeah. They're going to get a little spittle in their distance. And I think that's the kind of theater that I want to do.
Excellent. Let's get to another piece of music. And what's the third song you have?
We're back to Bessie Smith again, and I think she's going to be a big presence in our production of Streetcar. And those of you who know the play will know that one of Blanche's problems is the battle with the booze, as Mr. Waits would say, and this is a song called Me and My Gin.
Stay away from me, 'cause I'm in my sin. Stay away from me, 'cause I'm in my sin. If this place gets raided, it's me and my gin. Don't try me, nobody, 'cause you will never win. Me nobody, 'cause you will never win. I'll fight the Army Navy, yes, me and my gin. Any bootlegger sure is a pal of mine. Any bootlegger sure is a pal of mine. 'Cause a good old bottle of gin will get it all the time. When I'm feeling high, ain't nothing I won't do. When I'm feeling high, ain't nothing I won't do. Keep me full of liquor, and I'll sure be nice to you. I don't want no clothes, and I don't need no bed. meeting instead.
Tony, now that I've met you, I realize that we could just talk for the whole entire hour. We really didn't need music to fill it up, but this is great music you brought. Bessie Smith. Yeah. And Coming to Light recently, as you mentioned off air, an HBO special, I believe.
Yeah, it's a film just out now, just a couple of weeks ago, I think. So I've seen a couple scenes from it, and I haven't seen the whole thing myself, but it looks great.
Yeah, so you want to take that in. But that gives the flavor of the first show. Why don't you run down the other shows real quickly here, and then we'll get to the other piece of music.
Yeah, I mean, what we do at the GAM, and I guess, you know, what helps to form our identity, I think, is the way people think about us, and certainly the impression we want to give is that we're trying to do shows oftentimes that have that are provocative and that have a social impact, that are kind of talking about things that are happening around us now. So the second show of the season is a play called The Rant by Andrew Case. It's a fairly new play, hasn't been done that often. I first read it actually in 2008 when it was first written. It's only had, I believe, a couple of productions. But if you read it today, you would think it was written yesterday in response to Ferguson, in response to Baltimore. It's a Rashomon-like thriller, in a sense, about a investigation into a police shooting. Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe it's 6 years old now. Of course, these problems have been with us, but I think
it's gonna, modern media and now Twitter, we're, right, and all the social media available, things get spread much quicker, of course.
Yeah. So I think, you know, this is a play that I've been circling around for a couple of years, and all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute, you know, this is the time. If there ever was needed to be a time, it's now to do this play. So I think it's going to be an important one, a very exciting, powerful drama, mm-hmm, followed by a political satire by a great writer, George Brandt, who actually wrote a play called Grounded, which we opened this season, our past season with, which was about a female drone pilot. Very timely. It's currently actually just closing a run in New York at the Public Theater with Anne Hathaway playing the pilot. It's a one-woman show directed by Julie Taymor. But George was a quasi-local boy, was in town for a while, and here earlier in his career, and is a friend and a great, great writer. This is a play called Grizzly Mama, which is starts as a political satire. It's got a twist in it that it changes tone pretty powerfully by the end, but let's just say that a reactionary conservative presidential candidate who is from Alaska,
whose daughter is in the news.
Yeah, and the daughter is part of the play. It's loosely based on that. It's not Sarah Palin, but it's certainly inspired by some of those stories. But a mother moves her daughter to Alaska to assassinate this political candidate, and so it's a political satire, as I said, and it's very, very funny. Because of the subject matter it's dealing with, it's incredibly surprising and doesn't allow you to kind of rest comfortably with your views. Let's put it that way. And then we're going to finish up a trilogy of plays that we started several years ago by Martin McDonagh. It's a play called A Skull in Connemara, and Martin McDonagh, who also wrote The Pillow Man, which we have done, we're big fans of his, great Irish, Anglo-Irish playwright, and also now a film director and writer. Some of you may have seen In Bruges or Seven Psychopaths, both great, great films. He's a dark comic writer, and he wrote three plays set in a small town in Ireland, which they call the murder capital of Western Ireland. It's a little village of probably 200 people where every other person seems to be getting killed. They're very, very funny, very dark family comedies. And this is the third in a trilogy. You don't need to know the other two to see it. They're just all set in the same village, and they refer to some of the same characters. So we're going to finish that up. We've done the two previous, Lonesome West and Beauty Queen of Lanon. And then we're going to close the year out with our staple writer, as I said, mentioned earlier, Winter's Tale by William Shakespeare, and that'll be directed by Fred Sullivan. And we have a long history with Shakespeare, and that's one of the other things that really defines us as a theater. As I mentioned, the production that probably most defines us and really got this phase of the theater off and running was that production of Hamlet back in 1997 that Fred and I and many of us worked on together, and helped to form a kind of idea that in the minds of an audience that, wow, you know, seeing Shakespeare in such a small space, you know, an epic play in an intimate space, as I'd like to say, is what the GAM does well, is really something that is important to us. So we go back to him usually every other year. And our last production was Macbeth. That was last season before this one. And so next year we're looking at Winter's Tale.
Excellent. And the good news is, if you're listening and you want to recap everything that Tony just said, you can go to the website. It's all there. It's a beautiful website, unlike some other theaters that don't have all the information you want. Everything you want is
you've got here. Everything you need.
Everything you need. So do that. Yeah. Let's take another piece of music before we take a next break.
Yeah, back to Bessie again, a song that the title says it all. Need a little sugar in my bowl, and who doesn't?
There you go. To Conducting Conversations, I'm Mike Mano, sitting with Tony Estrella, the artistic director of the GAM Theater in Pawtucket, and we've been talking about the upcoming season and all the things that are happening at the building, and I say building because you mentioned you're always anxious for something new to happen, right? If someone came to you and say, look, I've got this 200-seat theater, and I want to give it to you, you'd take it, wouldn't you?
Depends on where it is and what it was like, you know? I mean, theaters are weird animals, you know, because, you know, depending on the most important thing for me in a theater, right, both as an artist and as an audience member, is what is that dynamic between the audience and the stage? And, you know, and that's going to dictate your experience, you know? So, you know, when I go to Providence Performing Arts Center, and there's, I don't know, 3,000 seats,
3,000
it's going to have to be a show that really fills a space like that, you know, because, you know, I can remember being in there years ago to see a play, a straight play. It was Doubt, the great play by, why am I blanking on his name right now? It'll come to me in a second.
I know who you mean, but I can't help
you. John Patrick Shanley, excuse me, of course. Wonderful production of that play with incredible actors. I was actually asked to moderate a panel with the actors for the audience after the show. And so I got the house seats, you know, I got the best seats in the house. So it was like row, you know, maybe seven or eight on the aisle.
Yeah.
And because of the orchestra pit and because of the way the stage was set, you know, the set was kind of on a platform back a little bit. I was still in the seventh or eighth row, like, you know, it felt like 50 feet away. And I was like, how is this playing to the people behind me? You know, there's only four actors on stage, you know? And so a play like that, you know, which requires a sense of intimacy, it can be a tough one in a big space.
Sure.
So, you know, as we certainly are looking to get a little bit more room, both for the audience, a few more seats, not many, and more room for the actors. But we have to be very careful because our mission is in part about intimacy, and we have to make sure that that dynamic that people feel now when they come into the theater is the same wherever we go. And we're certainly, so we're looking, and we're hoping, you know, we're in kind of early days, as I said, of planning for the next stages, and we're certainly working hard and to be in Pawtucket. It's been we have a great relationship with that town.
You're not going
to
move to the riverfront in Providence.
No.
No. They want to stay in Pawtucket.
No, they're already, aren't they trying to get the Paw Sox? Isn't that enough? You know what I mean? Taking enough from Pawtucket as it is. So no, yeah, we're definitely, you know, it's been a great relationship there. And I feel the theater is such an integral part of the community now. And that's important, you know, that we as theatrical institutions, as artistic and cultural institutions, feel a part of the community. And because we make the communities better.
Now, we happen to have a very, very intelligent audience that listens to WCRI. And for the most part, some of them have some expendable income. So if they were interested in donating, can they do that through the website?
Oh, can they do that through the website? They absolutely can. They can go check it out. And there's it wouldn't be a proper website if it didn't have a donate here button, I don't think, for us in the not-for-profits. Thank you for bringing it up because it's in the not-for-profit sector, of course, right? We are technically, as a 501c3, we're a charity. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? Well, theater is very expensive to produce. And in order for, to continue to produce quality theater, that's a human endeavor that we perform six, sometimes seven times a week. And that means humans working every single day at a real job. And in order to do that, that requires, not insignificant resources. And I think even at a small level, even for us in the small theater world. And so, you know, about half of our, budget, our operating budget is going to be, we need to fundraise to do in order to keep the ticket prices accessible. And that's another part of our mission, which is we want to make sure that we have a range of prices that make theater accessible for everybody. If you look at the for-profit model, which is why when you go to New York to see a show, now you're paying easily, even for a straight play with five characters, you're paying, $150 a seat,
right?
Because that's a for-profit model.
So I think the 501(c)(3) is an important thing to remember because that means it's tax deductible.
Tax deductible, absolutely.
And so you can go to the website, make that deduction, or if you want to talk to a real person, call somebody. I'm sure they'll walk you through it.
They certainly will.
They'll even go to your house and pick it up.
Call up, and we'll put you right through to our development director, Kate. So she'd love to talk to you. And the more people that we can get involved, and it's great that we're down here. You know, Rhode Island is a small state, but at the same time, certainly part of this as well. We kind of all of us blanch a little bit if the ride's over 20 minutes or crosses particular, geographical boundaries. I'm not going down Route 4, but we are drawing, as I was saying, we're trying to get up into Boston. We're also trying to get as many people to come up from down here as we can get. And we've got board members now from South County and who are great, and they're doing their best to recruit. And we hope that, people in this area will come up and see us in Pawtucket.
It's really not hard to get to. It's I live probably 10 minutes max from where your theater is in Providence.
Mm-hmm.
And I can come from the heart of South County in a half an hour to Providence.
Absolutely.
Another 5 or 10 minutes up the road, there you are.
I drive to URI twice a week to teach, and it takes me about 30 minutes. So
yeah,
it's not a bad ride at all.
That's great. So get out and support this marvelous theater. Tony, I'm sorry that it's taken so long to get you here, because we'd like to know about all the opportunities in Rhode Island. As I mentioned, there's some in Woonsocket, there's some in Westerly, they're all over the place, as well as nearby Connecticut and Massachusetts. And the GAM Theater is certainly an integral part of that, and a long time, very, very prestigious organization. And glad to meet you, and I hope you'll come back and do this again.
Oh, absolutely. Just waiting for the invite.
All right, great. We have one more piece of music to listen to. What'll that be?
Yeah, back to the blue piano for Streetcar Named Desire. This is another Tom Waits song, and it's a little tongue-in-cheek, but also poignant. It's called The Piano Has Been Drinking,
All
Not
right.
Me.
And for the rest of you, I'll see you next week on Conducting Conversations.
The piano has been drinking. My nectar is asleep. And the combo went back to New York. The jukebox says to take a leak. And the carpet needs a haircut. And the spotlight looks like a prison break. 'Cause the telephone's out of cigarettes. And the balcony is on the make. And the piano has been drinking. The piano has been drinking. And the menus are all freezing. And the light man's blind in one eye. And he can't see out of the other. And a piano tuner's got a hearing aid and showed up with his mother. And a piano has been drinking. A piano has been drinking. As the bouncer is a sumo wrestler, cream puff Casper milk toast, and the owner is a mental midget with an IQ of a fence post. 'Cause the piano has been drinking. The piano has been drinking. And you can't find your waitress counter, and she hates you and your friends, and you just can't get served without her. And the box office is drooling, and the bar stools are on fire, and the newspapers were fooling. Ashtrays have retired. 'Cause the piano has been drinking. The piano has been drinking. The piano has been drinking. Not me. Not me. Not me. Not me, not me.
Conducting Conversations was brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, using music and the arts to keep your child educated, entertained, and having fun. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.